Show me that smile again. Show me that smile. Don't waste another minute. I'm gonna use the hammer beer opener.
Now, I confess, I never really watched this show.
Green Hand. That was early, you know, like, for us.
Yeah.
I think, you know. I remember watching it, but I don't remember anything about it, you know.
I just don't remember. I mean, was this a TGIF show? I don't remember. I mean, because Family Matters was the quintessential. Like, Full House and Family Matters were the quintessential TGIF shows that I remember.
Family Matters was on TGIF? For real?
I think so. There was, like, Boy Meets World, and there was... I stopped watching, like, right after TGIF started. That's where I stopped watching terrible TV shows, so I never got into, like, Boy Meets World or anything of those things, so I'm kind of like, you know, we're Generation Y, we're the lost generation.
There's not even agreement on how lost we are. That's how lost we are.
So I think one thing we wanted to talk about were QR codes, or rather QR codes.
Quick resource codes, right? Resource, response, resource, I believe. Okay, so you don't like QR codes, apparently?
I find them to be superfluous. I find them to be... They never really give you much... They point you to a web... Because there's not much information you can put in there. It's like 256 characters or something. So they point you to a website that's almost always an advertisement as opposed to information. Mm-hmm. And so getting out your phone, taking a picture, getting that website, and going to there turns out to not really give you much information, but just another advertisement for whatever that is. I find that, at least in the way they're used, they're completely superfluous and useless.
I think that's a fair supposition, that a lot of places don't use them properly. You can make your own QR codes. You can take them back.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to make QR codes.
You can take them back.
What am I going to do with them?
Make QR codes and put them out in the world that are useful.
To say what? You only have X many characters.
Imagination, my friend. Imagination. URL to information of value. You know, they put QR codes on tombstones.
They do?
Oh, dude, yes. Check that out. Get your Google shit going and find a QR code on a tombstone.
I don't want to.
That is some faith in the technology.
That's like...
If you're the dude who created a QR code, sure. But anyone else? Really?
That's like having a USB port on your tombstone. In 10 years, USB is going to be gone, dude. It's going to be something else. You know, just like 3.5-inch floppies. They were there for a while. Well, they're gone.
But the readers aren't going to go
Zip
away.
Zip drives.
Like, cameras aren't going to go away from devices. So... You know, you can have a QR code app, even if it's insanely unpopular, where it's like, you know, like I got those audio tapes, those cassette tapes, which I don't have a good way to digitize, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't have a good player to put them on. I'm screwed, but I'm never going to have a device without a camera.
Never say never, but I mean...
I'm going to have a device... I'm not going to have the means to take an optical photograph.
Well, yeah... Yeah, well, not the old, not traditional methods of optical photography.
Well, no, not the traditional. I'm not going to need film in a dark room, but
yeah.
I'm going to be able to capture an image and apply a QR code algorithm against it. I'm going to have the means to capture that image, even if it's straight into my eyeball, to my brain.
Yeah, but so what? I've actually found it hard to find on a computer. Like, on this, I found a device that will use the camera to read QR codes. But I've not found a program, I've looked all over, I've not found a program that will just take a look at a picture and read a QR code.
No, you can certainly do that.
Yeah, on phones, but not on the actual PC. I've looked for those, and I can't find one, and it's annoying the hell out of me.
I thought I had found one on... For the computer, you could feed it a file and it would tell you the... Here, talk for a sec.
All right. I'm currently watching, this will probably be released next week because I'm away, this week. I'm actually away when you're receiving this, but I'm currently watching the first game of the Detroit New York American League Championship Series, and I thought the Yankees were going to lose. It may still, but it's all tied up 4-4
and
now.
You have good Google Foo. Screw you. Right here. Upload a file to this
and I
website.
I was looking for a program. That's probably why. I wasn't looking for an online thing.
But everything's in the cloud now, man. Mm. It's about the cloud. It's even a Mac app.
But does that just... Do you upload any image that has a QR code in it or an actual QR code? What about an image that has a QR code?
Okay. We'll test this shit out. We'll test this shit out. I'm going to take a picture of a can with a QR code on it. I'll even include the UPC code so it gets really confused. All right. So their normal picture of the can. I am going to iCloud this to myself.
That sounds so dirty. Actually, that's like that 30 Rock joke where Tracy was like, he learned that Googling himself just means actually looking something up. And he was like, so that's why Liz Lemon was so okay with it. And there was a flashback to when he said, Liz Lemon, is it okay if I Google myself in your office? She was like, sure, Tracy. And he said, can I use your computer? She said, how else are you going to do it?
He thought she was so cool. Actually, I'm going to email it to myself because I can't figure out how to put this thing on the cloud because I don't think I have all my photos automatically.
So all of a sudden, it's a big deal to get a...
No, screw that. I'm going to use Dropbox. My Dropbox shit going on here. Yeah, so let's see. It'd be nice if I could upload that, integrate that into the other shit, but upload...
There we go. The way your voice goes into various different pitches.
I don't have a very deep voice to begin with, but
it's plenty deep. Come on.
Okay, but I don't know how it is for other people, but to go into a falsetto is like super easy. It's like I have gleaned from life experience that I can go into falsetto easier than most men. I don't know.
Yeah, it's easy to go from one register to another. It's
okay.
For some reason, it's something that your vocal cords can do very easily.
They're both special, damn it.
So it is a good way to add emphasis to a... Emphasis. Because we've been drinking alcohol today.
A little bit. Okay, so I'm uploading the photo to Zing with an X in it. Bad image. Okay, you're right.
Yep.
The image you uploaded could not be decoded. It was too large. Go back. Oh, so don't even try to process it. Let me resize it. Come on, computer should be smarter than this shit, but let me make it smaller. I'm not going to crop it. I'm going to leave all the extraneous crap in there. All right. But how big should I make it? Like 700 pixels?
Sure.
700 by 933.
You need to have some resolution for them to be able to read it. Okay, that should be fine. Your computer could... I mean, your phone could still read that as a QR code, right? So...
I don't think so.
Go back. Let's see. This is a useful experiment to see whether this website... I think this one of those websites. You just need to actually crop the QR code and do it. So,
I need to get back to the Finder. Okay, now it's only 200 kilobytes. We'll drop it right there. We'll submit it again. Survey says, figured it out.
Okay. All right. So you had to do some manipulating to get it down to a thing, but
it was
a phone picture. You had to do manipulation to get it down, like. I just want a program on your computer so you can mouse over a QR code and have it go.
Uh-huh. Well, you just give away your million-dollar idea.
It's not a million-dollar idea because QR codes are useless. If QR codes actually meant something, it might be a million-dollar idea, but I'm happy giving it away.
What is the circumstance where you have a QR code in a file on your computer? That you want to decode. How did it get that far?
I was watching an episode of, I believe it was Conan O'Brien or something like that.
And, it was on screen?
Or no, it was Jimmy Fallon. And he was, yeah, did one of them, he was doing a QR code. It was when they were doing the Friday dance, one of them was putting out a QR code. He held that up.
That is a completely unreasonable explanation. Fucking word.
Expectation.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I couldn't remember expectation. I was coming up with explanation.
We have alcohol. Yes,
completely unreasonable, Greg. You're watching a TV show which is made for the sole purpose of being on the television. So that whole workflow, people are going to pull out their cameras and snap the screen. They're not going to have a screen cap on their computer.
But I've seen websites with actual QR codes on them.
Those are retarded websites. You can't fault the technology for idiots who use it wrong.
I should be able to have a picture and just be like, import a picture into
the... Why not make it a fucking hyperlink if it's going to be on the computer, right? Okay. So, QR codes versus NFC.
But why do I have to get out my phone and scan it in order to be able to do things?
QR codes versus NFC, smart posters.
Well, okay, so the problem with NFC is that it's implemented insecure.
It's implemented. Well, no, there's nothing insecure about NFC. What's insecure is the applications that use NFC to do things.
Okay.
Right? So it's an implementation problem. You scan a smart poster with your NFC chip that has a known buffer overflow exploit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boom, you're owned.
Now you're pwned.
Pwned, right. Going through the analog hole of QR code seems a lot safer, right? Because your input validation...
Well, it's easier. You don't have to put a radio transmitter and everything. I mean, there's that.
But the security on it, too. I mean, true, you could have a QR code reader that could have a buffer overflow, but...
Well, you got a QR code that points you to a website that has a... buffer overflow for your browser.
Sure. Yeah. The idea of holding your telephone up against a smart poster seems a lot more exploitive than snapping a photograph.
I've never seen that anyway, so I don't know. The only thing I've seen NFC used for is like when I use my wallet and I pass it through something. And while that's very convenient and mm-hmm. nice, it also seems ridiculously insecure. Like someone could just wave a wand near me on the train and get my...
Well, so, I mean, it's... It uses different physics, which is interesting, we could talk about, right? Near-field radio is a different part of radio. It behaves fundamentally different than, like, broadcast radio or far-field radio. It's a completely different series of effects and whatnot. It's almost like a different... force. I mean, you know, just analogy wise, right? It would be, you
what?
Know, near field radio.
Explain this to me.
I'm not versed enough. Give me one second here. But near field.
I mean, radio is radio.
No, when you're dealing on such short distances, it behaves differently.
Well, you're talking about power is reduced by the square of the distance. That's just radio.
Give me one sec.
An omnidirectional radio transmitter, the power will be reduced by the square of the distance. So that means that you have to be very, very close if you're transmitting at a very low power in order for there to be any effect. That's why you have to basically put your wallet right up to the thing, and it beeps. You can't do it like 5 feet away. You can't do it even a foot away. It has to be right next to it. That's why it's near field, because the power is so low. So it's not a different physics. It's just... the fact that power
is
low.
That's not what I had just come across. Give me a second. I want to find this because it's going to be a good conversation, but it's going to be horrible radio finding the information. So, do you have anything you want to talk about?
There is other things. I had an issue with my parents. I don't know if I want to go into it. There's certain things that they are just being really, really crazy about. And my sister and I both recognize it. And there's nothing we can do. The only thing we can do about it is we can hope we don't turn into them when we become older. And it's sort of hoping against hope because my parents hope they didn't turn into that when they got older.
Here's a research paper we both need to read. The physics of the near field. I can't. The abstract is too long to even summarize right now with beer in me.
All right, well, I'm going to have to take a look at that piece of paper. All right, so let's go on to some other subject.
Let's forget about that for now. But I have heard on good authority about the physics between near-field radio and, I don't know what the opposite, I don't know if it's called far-field or what, but it's different. It's not, you know, the exploits that happen in RFID or, you know, like a RFID and stuff are not the same exploits that happen when you use the near field physics, when you're using the kind of things that happen in the near field. It's roughly equivalent to, you know, electromagnetic weak versus, you know, something else, you know, that's similar but different.
That sounds like a huge
pile of bullshit.
Pile of bullshit, but it could be true. It just sounds like a huge pile of bullshit. Let me get this thing up here. Sorry about the noise.
Just seeing his mic stand, it's finally drifted down over years of use.
All right. Sorry about that. Okay. I was thinking about this because I was watching a lot of baseball, and one of the things that happens in baseball is people say, particularly pitchers, I was trying to teach Jeff to understand, to sort of appreciate baseball, and he sort of got some of it. This is a while ago.
I get it, but still appreciate it. Knowing how to appreciate it and appreciating it are still two different things.
But you know, I totally concentrate on the pitching. That's really where the game is. It's in that confrontation, the pitcher and the batter.
I really told you that I like minor league baseball, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's because a pop fly to the outfield is not a sure thing. Yeah. You know?
I'm sure this has analogs in other sports, but I notice it most in baseball because baseball is what I watch most. So pitchers have various pitches, and sometimes they're on, and sometimes they're not. Like, you hear something like, well, I had a great curveball today. Yeah, the pitcher doesn't change, and the way he pitches doesn't change, but his curveball was better that day than it was other days. He had it one day, and he lost it another day, or a slider.
I mean, that's really... That's most sports, right? I mean, you know, a very good analogy, you know, and I don't have documented resources that an archer has ever said the same thing, right? But you can certainly imagine where archers have good days and bad days, and it's all muscle memory. It's all, you know, it's execution, you know?
That's what I want to do, is what is that? What is having a good day versus having a bad day? What is having your slider one day versus not having your slider on today? You know, all my pitches were working as opposed to all I had was my fastball. The rest of my pitches weren't working. What is that? Why is there a difference one day or another if it's all muscle memory and it's all the same thing? Why is there a difference between one day and another day? Is it slight differences in the way it's released? Is it slight differences in the way the movement is happening?
It could be recovery time.
Yeah,
it could
the
be
energy level you have. Is it, you know, is it something down to what you had to eat that day? You know, what your mitochondria is doing. So, I think there's
when you're dealing at the best of the best in major league whatever, where you know there's only a few hundred people that can perform at that level. It could be what your mitochondria is metabolizing. Yeah. You know.
So I think that's an interesting thing that, you know, if I were in sports science, I would try to take a year or so to study that from like multiple pitchers.
The nuance. It's almost the impossible problem. You know,
I would take video from multiple sides, and I would do things like
you need hypotheses first, right?
Yeah, okay.
What do you think is the main cause for this difference, right? You need to research that. You need to narrow it down.
My hypothesis is that there is either a physical or chemical difference between different outings.
Okay, you need a more narrow hypothesis. You need to have a first hypothesis. Maybe you can have more down the road. But what's the first thing you want to test?
Physical.
More detail.
I want to look at the...
You need a binary result, true or false, right? So
you not necessarily need a binary result, but what I do is I want to examine, via statistical methods, the over the course of a year, I want to examine
days
as close
since
as I can.
Last orgasm. There you go.
No. I want to examine as close as I can, sort of, you know... The pitcher, and then like a skeletal model of the pitcher as he pitches from one day to another, and note the days where he thinks, and other people think, whether there's agreement that he has his curveball and he doesn't have another, and compare those nights and see if there's a mechanical difference.
Right.
And what I want to do also, in confluence, and obviously get the pitcher's agreement, is like... Take blood tests on those days too. So every 5 days he gets a blood test. So we have some marker.
More data to. Yeah. So if you start to see a pattern, you can tease out more information about the pattern.
And what I would do is I wouldn't look at the data for a year. And if, you know, possibly what I would do is I would give the data to somebody else and have them analyze it without telling them what it is. That'd be the best way to do it. That'd be a double blind way to do it. But the best way to do it is not look at the data for a year. Just collect the data and don't look at it, and then try to randomize it and then see if you can see patterns. And then when you see the patterns, then compare that to what they thought were the patterns and see if those, any of those patterns match up.
The problem there is psychological is going to play such a big part in a sports, especially a pitcher or a kicker. You know, American football kicker. You know, because there's psychological. You know, when you're on, when you're on a hot streaks, right? Why are there streaks? I would suggest that it's not mechanical. I would suggest streaks are a big part psychological, It's
here's the thing, though. In any random distribution, you expect there to be streaks. And the thing is that we psychologically don't understand that. So there should be streaks in any random distribution. You would expect there to be streaks and long periods without, and then there are periods where they're relatively even number. But that's what's going to happen in a non-random distribution. You would expect there to be... It to be completely evened out over the course of it. Mm-hmm. But streaks happen in any random thing.
Yeah, to me, that's you're trying to eliminate the mechanical part of it, right? Because, I don't know, my hypothesis is, it's, if I had to say, like, what percentage is performance mental...
Right.
Versus the body being able to do the curveball. Right. I would say it's the mental part.
It all combines together. Like your mental acuity probably helps in terms of how you release and how you're doing your thing correctly. And then probably there's some chemicals in your body that help. I think they all combine together. I don't think there's one panacea to work for
everything.
It'd
be neat to see, like, have pitchers do certain dexterity tests and things, like, every day before, like, non-arduous dexterity tests to see if there's any variation from day to day on things like that, Because that would be help, get your data towards your mechanical hypotheses, right? Like, before a game, do this battery of nothing that would affect their play, you'd have to find easy tests, but a battery of tests, what's their grip strength, what's their this, what's their that, and see if there's any variation there.
And I think that there, you could probably do this, you'd have to do it like single A or double A. You couldn't do it in major league, obviously, it'd be too disruptive. But if you did it like single A, double A, and you sort of compared that, you may be able to find some correlation And hopefully it'd be relatively strong, like higher than, you know, that P equals 0.5 or something. But it's, you know, something so it's a little bit more than just
group strength,
collaboration.
Reaction time. Standing, like, vertical jump. I think, you know, those would be three things I'd want to test, you know. You know, obviously the pushing off the pitcher's mound, you know, the vertical jump would help, you know,
right,
quantize that. You know, grip strength would be how you could spin the ball and things like that. And
so
then,
I imagine,
but I think with reaction time would be interesting.
So I imagine with football, the same thing, like a quarterback may lose his throw one day and may be on. But
that's just because of concussions.
Yeah, it's but for pitching, since they do it so often, they throw 100 pitches a game. You have days where your curveball works and people don't talk about the days where, I guess, where your curveball is sort of half on and half out. They only talk about a day where it's working great or it's not working great. Mm-hmm. That's where I notice it the most.
How much of that is environmental? Is there information on, like, humid days versus dry days?
It's certainly something to take into account and to put in
there. Has to be information on that. You know, a pitch. I mean,
well, there is information on type of weather at the start of game, but I don't know if there's information over the course of.
I would be shocked if pitchers don't look at the barometer and if that doesn't affect their pitching. I'd be pretty shocked, actually.
I think you'd be shocked. I don't think pitchers look into the science of pitching that much. They know it does what it does. They don't know why.
I would think after a couple years or a career, they would know if, you know, high pressure, low pressure would give them. They would kind of get this feel for, you know, what works for them on these kind of days. I don't know. I mean, I would be surprised if pitchers don't have, even if it's just an anecdotal, you know, preference on certain kinds of weather days.
I don't have an answer for it.
That's why we need to do these studies, I guess.
Yes, that's why these studies must be done. We must do them. The trains must run on time. I just thought that was an interesting question, and I don't know the answer to it.
I almost called you up the other night. I was reading a story about the meteor that just passed a quarter of the distance between the Earth and the Moon.
Apophis, is that the one?
No, SC something something. It's only the size of a football field or something, but
didn't see it.
One article I read said you could see it with a small backyard telescope. I'm like, oh, I went outside. Oh, the stars are out. Maybe I should call Greg, but let me read some more stories first. Next story, you need a 10-inch telescope and no haze at all. That's not a backyard telescope in my book.
No, it's a backyard telescope, but it's not a...
No, literally it's a backyard telescope. Yeah. It could be a back... But yeah. It's not a backyard telescope.
Yeah. You can probably see it with like an 8-inch Schmidt-Cassegrain or something like that.
I forget what they said on the magnitude, but minus 13 or something, 13 magnitude or something like that.
None of the stuff we have would be capable of that.
But when they said small backyard telescope, I'm like, shit, kind of clear out. It's not Greg's cheat night, but maybe, you know, to see this meteor. But yeah, when I read the second article, 10-inch telescope and no haze. No reason to call Greg.
Not here in the middle of Pittsburgh, roughly.
So I was excited, and then I was let down by two different articles.
Well, that's science for you. Get you excited, then let you down.
Yeah.
There was a recent article about somebody came up with an idea for how they could possibly by changing the Alcubierre warp metric for one of the solutions to Einstein's field equations was the Alcubierre metric, which allowed for essentially a spacecraft to warp space in such a way that it's not traveling faster than light, nothing else traveling faster than light, but it's warping space around it so that it's effectively moving faster than light. But it requires something called negative energy. It requires the amount of more than the energy than the sun puts out in its entire lifetime. It was just ridiculous. So they found a way that they could make it asymmetrical and make it into sort of a...
Well, you can imagine like the almost like a bow wave, right? Where, like, you know, the wave crests at the front of the ship. Yeah. Imagine if you're compressing space-time at the front. You'd almost be sucked into it or something like
that. Right, exactly. Yeah. So they found a way to, if they change the field, not be a sphere, but to be more asymmetrical and more teardrop-shaped, they could limit the amount of energy to only the amount of energy in, let's say, 150 kilograms worth of matter. Still more than society has ever produced, but something.
Yeah. What that's like two men's worth of matter.
And we don't know what
in energy.
And we don't know what negative energy is or how we can do it. And also the Alcubierre metric tells you how you could possibly have a space bubble exist and move, but not how either you create it or you stop it. There's also the people found out that recently that. With the Alcubierre metric, if you did this and you'd have this huge amount of radiation blast that would then blast off at the point of destination once you arrive there, there'd just be this like a gamma ray burst of detonation of radiation. There'd be also, you know, particles that you'd interact with on a sub relative basis, but that would more than likely destroy your ship. The radiation that you'd encounter. There's too many questions for it to be anything close to realistic, but it's a way the like I said, the Einstein things are just equations, and you can do lots of math to solve them in interesting ways, but it doesn't mean they're practical or realistic.
Yes.
So it's one of those things where scientists are saying, yeah, but,
you know, it all depends on how. There's always things that are impossible. You know, they started building the LHC in the 80s. They had planned it, but, you know, industry couldn't make it, you know. There was millennia.
What? No, they tried to, they're going to make the SSC in the 80s, and that was going to be higher power than the LHC.
I listened to, they're talking about the LHC. They started planning it in the mid 80s, and they, you know, to kind of simplify it, they had to wait for industry to be able to manufacture it. You know, that's the same keynote I talked about earlier.
If the superconducting super collider was not canceled by Congress, it would have been more powerful than the LHC. The reason why the LHC was created within the bounds it was is because it was created basically in the area where an older particle accelerator was, and that's why it was there.
He mentioned it. I don't think the guy was lying. He works at CERN.
No, it's true that technology has improved, and the way we detect things have improved.
There's lots of things that have seemed impossible, right? I mean, that's basically the point I was going to. You know, flying seemed very impossible.
It's not the same as the speed of light.
It's not the same, but it could be.
Like, okay, like the speed of light requires, there are like three or four fundamental assumptions you make, and then you just do algebra, and the speed of light and the mass equivalency equation just falls out of it. It just happens to fall out of just the Pythagorean theorem.
But I subscribe to what we know and what science proves. But everything seems impossible at one point. And you're hacking your body. Why can't there be a flaw that lets us hack space-time? You know? I mean, we don't know. It probably does not exist, but it could.
Okay, we know that you can't hack, quote-unquote, space-time locally. We don't know about non-locally. So there's your avenue. We don't know about some sort of non-locality version of the wormholes or
It's unlikely. It's more unlikely than being able to fly. But imagine this people's state of mind before they realized what air was. You know, there's just a level of discovery that.
There's always things to learn there, but there are certain sort of rules that. You know, especially as we get better at learning things, there are certain rules that it's harder and harder to figure out how to break.
No, I agree. It's harder and harder. It's like, you know, like, I want to invent something. What can I invent? Well, fucking everything's invented. Well, it's not.
No, it's not.
Exactly.
But here's an example of what I mean. There are certain fundamental things that why you can sort of do other things. There are certain fundamental things that won't be able to change. The example I give is we have a fantastic understanding of quantum electrodynamics. That does not mean that we can change the fact that an electron has charge. Electron has charge. We can't make an electron without a charge. It's impossible. So people who are thinking that by learning about the Higgs, can we change mass? No, Higgs is a way for us to learn about mass, but the same way electrons have a charge, particles have a mass.
No, we just talked about this recently.
So these things are fundamental. These things can't change. So there are certain things you can't change.
I
want to
talk a little bit more about
certain ways you can play with
things. No, this
could
be science. I mean, this is science fiction right now. You know, but it's a new idea to me about the hacking the universe. Think about that for a second.
This is singularity. This is basically Kurzweil singularity.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. I'm sure I'm not the first person to think of this shit. But, you know, like, is there flaws in the rules of nature that we would be able to exploit? You know, like right now it seems like, no, we can never get the energy to do so. But what, you know, like, think about that. Like,
well, flaws is an interesting way of putting it. Are there avenues for us to explore that would allow us to bypass certain other restrictions? We don't know. We don't know. And it's definitely possible. But based on everything we know, without using avenues that are unknown to us, there's no way to break the speed of light. Without using avenues unknown to us, there's no way to do this sort of thing. But are there roads not taken? Possibly.
Right. Starting to get pretty religious here.
I don't think so.
Well, I mean,
not religious. It's extremely speculative.
So, yeah, speculating about it and believing in it with no evidence is the difference, right?
Yeah.
So,
did we just? There's our
There's a fuzz,
hot fuzz. I think that's a good time to end it. So, whenever you do happen to put in the stuff for the
we'll buy
a new thing. You can use my money for that.
We'll do that soon. Yeah. All right. Thanks everybody for listening to the post show.
Thank you everybody. Enjoy the buzz.